Cape Talk. Car Talk.
Now, normally you'd hear the voice of Chira de Siena in the Car Talk segment, but he is over on the other side of the planet in the USA at a car launch. So the time difference was not working in our favor today. The poor man does need to sleep occasionally. So instead, we are absolutely delighted to welcome back technical editor at Car Magazine, Nicol Lowe, to tackle your motoring queries today. He has been a guest on this segment before. Nicol, it's wonderful to have you with us today. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for calling. Hi, listeners.
So it is your opportunity to phone in and ask away whether you are in the market for a new vehicle or perhaps looking at second hand, wanting to decide between different models, looking for advice on your motoring purchase. Give us a call on 021-446-0567 or leave a voice note on 072-567-1567. You can also send your question as an SMS to 31567. While we wait for the first few questions to come through, Nicol, let's take a look at your car review. And not one, but two new Buckys released under the Ford brand. What's going on? Going to tell us a little bit more?
Yes, Papa. We were lucky to get two of the latest Ford Ranger Buckys in our hands for a road test, the upcoming July issue of Car Magazine. It will reach the shelves in the middle of the month. And they are the new Wildtrak and, I think more importantly, the new Raptor. Now, that name, everyone's been looking forward to the Raptor. We had both of them on test, and we will actually have them, as I say, as a comparative in Car Magazine. And, yes, let's just quickly discuss what they are. Mm-hmm. If you talk about double cab Buckys, the Ranger, everyone knows how popular these Buckys are. But they've introduced a new 2-liter turbo diesel powertrain in the Ranger. So you can get a 2-liter bi-turbo in your Wildtrak Ranger. You can still get your 3.2, so people that are scared of the smaller capacity diesels, the 3.2, the older, faster engine is still available, that's 147 kilowatts. But the new 2-liter bi-turbo is 157 kilowatts and 500 newton meters, so it's actually a lot more powerful than the old 3.2 used to be. But what everyone is interested in is this Raptor. Now, the Raptor is sort of a niche Bucky in this mm-hmm. segment in the sense that it's all about the suspension. It's not about the power. This is not a straight line Bucky. It's not comparable to like an Amarok V6 turbo diesel or the new X-Class 350. This is a segment in its own. And I was very fortunate to go and drive this Bucky in Australia, in the outback. And I can tell you that the suspension on this Bucky is something else. It's really a race suspension that has been added to this Bucky, and do not think you can change your own Ranger to Wildtrak spec. This Bucky, the suspension is completely different. It's Fox suspension all round, so no leaf springs at the back. It's unique A-arms to the vehicle. The chassis has been cut up to make space for all the suspension. It's got a wider track. It's got more ground clearance, bigger wheels, longer suspension travel. And we actually took the normal Wildtrak and this Raptor to Atlantis Dunes to go and play for this feature. And as you know, once you've been playing in the area, there's always ruts forming in the sand. And when you drive a normal Wildtrak, which is a normal, it's a very comfortable, well-made Bucky, you drive over those ruts and it feels like your spine is getting hurt because the bumps are so severe. Then you get into the Raptor, and it just floats over those ruts as it's not there. And we all seen the pictures of a Raptor jump, so we thought, oh, we'll go and try that as well. So we found a dune at the right angle, and you wouldn't believe it. This Raptor actually flies. It flies in the air. It lands softly. There's no damage done to the vehicle. It's made for this. I think the problem with a Raptor is people will probably buy it for the looks because it really looks like a proper Bucky. It's butch. It's got these flared wheel arches. But if you don't drive it off-road as it's meant to be driven, then you might as well just buy the normal Wildtrak and save yourself 100,000 rands because a Raptor does cost 786,000 rands versus a Wildtrak that is 678. So you're talking about 100,000 rand that you can save. But I think people out there, if you think with your head, you'll probably buy a Wildtrak, the normal one. But if you think with your heart, I think everyone wants a Raptor. I mean, they just look so great. And there's a lot of Raptor imitation kits going on Rangers all over the country. But that's not a real Raptor. If you drive a real Raptor, you'll realize what it's all about.
Okay, so are they widely available in South Africa already? If somebody listening feels enthused to go and put a deposit down today, can they walk into their nearest dealership and find one on the floor?
Definitely, and as I say, it's not a limited series, so yes, you can buy your Raptor. One thing I can also mention is it's got a 10-speed gearbox. Both these, the powertrain, the 2 liters now come with a 10-speed gearbox. It's co-developed with General Motors. It's almost too many gears, if you think about it. It almost resembles a CVT at this stage because it's always looking for the right gear, but that means that the performance-wise, it's really good. But yeah, you can go to your dealership, you can compare the two. And as I say, if you're scared about a 2 liter turbo diesel and all the jokes about the 2 liter milk cartons and orange juice, you can still buy your 3.2. It's still available from your Ford dealer.
Okay, Nickel sounding rapturous about the new Ford Raptor and the test driving the Ford Ranger Wild Truck. So look for the article in the July edition of Car Magazine if you'd like to see the side-by-side comparison. Before we get on to any questions, Nickel, I also want to ask you about a headline really that caught my eye earlier in the week about Michelin literally reinventing the wheel. It's some kind of new technology to help protect the wheels and rims. What can you tell us?
Yes, quite interesting. Michelin, a tire manufacturer that has teamed up with a company called Maxion, and what they've developed is a flexible rim. Now, we know with potholes in this country, and everyone wants to go for the biggest wheels and the lowest profile tires because it looks so good, but then when you hit a pothole, that causes real damage. You get rims that crack, you damage the wheels, the tires, and it's a very costly affair. So what they've done, they've actually developed this rim, which is still an alloy, but it's got a rubber flange on the outside where the tire actually sits. And they've done some tests on potholes, and they would say for a normal alloy wheel, at 28 kilometers per hour, there was terminal damage to that rim. I mean, it was cracked. You have to throw it away afterwards. And then with a special rim, they could actually not damage it at any speed that they went through. And there's actually a video online. If you type in Michelin and Maxion and you type in flexible rims, you can actually see a slow-mo video of that rim going through the pothole, bending, and then just springing back to the normal shape afterwards as if nothing happened. So I think that's something new to look forward to.
Absolutely. How soon before we see that technology in use in the market? How long do you think before we'll have the option of choosing one of those rims?
I think with all these kind of technologies, they're still experimental, they're still developing, they have to go through loads of tests before we'll actually be allowed to buy it. What would be interesting for me as well, how it would affect the ride and handling, because obviously the lip isn't as stiff as it would be with the alloy. So it might be that maybe you compromise a bit on dynamic ability with this flexible rim, but let's see. I mean, if it can save a lot of money and there's no, and it still handles well, then why not?
Absolutely, and I'm sure from the safety perspective as well, that would be a huge consideration. Okay, so good, interesting news there on that new technology from the Michelin Maxion partnership, if you want to read up some more. All right, with that, we go to the lines. A reminder that you can call us on 021-446-0567 or leave your question as a voice note on 072-567-1567. Our first caller today, Suzanne in Wynberg. Good afternoon.
Hi, Pippa, and to your guest, and I'm a bit interested to know that my husband went through a puddle of water and his electric's blue and his engine blue. I'm not sure what the engine means last night. And the car might be a write-off. It's a Peugeot that has only done 100,000 Ks. And why would going through a puddle be absorbed into the engine is my question.
It's a very interesting one and a very pertinent one in the current weather conditions in Cape Town. Nickel, can you try and explain to Suzanne what probably happened to her husband's car?
It all depends on how deep this puddle was. Obviously, there's a wading depth that you shouldn't go deeper than that. But if it's just a normal puddle and it's water sprayed into the engine compartment, usually what happens is one of the electrical components or even the connectors on the harness will get wet. It may be a short circuit of some sorts. And you can get some sensors damaged and so on. Worst case scenario, the engine control unit could have been damaged. that can be for an engine to be damaged. I mean, there you have to ingest the water. So you have to suck it in at the air intake. So normally that would happen when like a 4x4 crosses a river and it's deeper than they thought, and the air intake is actually below the water level, and then it actually sucks in the water, and that causes terminal damage in the engine because of hydraulic locks, and it can bend the piston, the conrods and so on. But you wouldn't expect that to happen to a passenger car going through a puddle. So I would definitely, if the husband can take the car to an auto electrician, I would say definitely do that. They can do an onboard diagnostic check on the engine control module just to see what codes are set and where the short might have happened. But I don't think the engine itself is damaged. It might be that some electronic units got a bit damaged, but it should not be terminal in the sense that it's complete write-off. Hopefully not.
Yeah, because it was on the main roads in Claremont.
It's hardly going through a river. Yeah. I know it did look like a river yesterday, but certainly not deep enough for that level of damage. Suzanne, has somebody taken a look at the car already?
It's at some dealership.
At the dealership. Okay, so maybe consider Nicole's advice of getting it to an auto electrician to take a look at.
Thanks, Nicole, and thanks, Pippa, for a wonderful show as always.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate that, Suzanne, and I really do hope that it is not a terminal injury to the car. That's probably not the right word, but you know what I mean. Good luck to you. Right, let's go to some questions that have come in by voice note.
Hi, Pippa. I'd like to know what your guest thinks of the new Renault Duster, the 1.5 diesel automatic, in terms of just general use and availability of spares. Thanks. Bye. This is Graham.
Thanks, Graham. Nicole, your views on that car?
Yes. Actually, here at Car Magazine, we're very fond of the Renault Duster. The new one has just been launched and actually won a top 12 award for our SUV section. So, yes, we're very fond of the car. The 1.5 turbo diesel is very fuel efficient. I think with the new Duster as well, they upped the refinement. So where the previous one was a bit rougher on the edges and so on, still a nice vehicle, but the new one has just taken it a step higher in refinement. So the interior is nice, very fuel efficient, punchy engine. And the automatic gearbox one is very nice to drive. Obviously, that is only front-wheel drive. If you want the four-wheel drive Duster, they only come in a manual transmission. So, yeah, we're very fond. So I think for the price as well, for around the 300,000 Rand mark, there's not a lot that can compete with a Duster. I think it's got that segment almost to itself there. Regarding the spares and availability, I know Renault has, they've improved a lot. I mean, they used to be in the old days, there was quite a few problems with getting the Renault spares. I think they have improved the situation. I would just say, when you get your car serviced, I'm not a fan of the multi-franchise dealers because I know there's quite a few of them around, somewhat better than others. I like to go to a dedicated dealership. So with Renault, if you go for servicing, to go to a dedicated Renault dealership. I've just heard better views from those than the multi-franchise servicing many vehicles.
Okay, that's a really, really useful piece of advice. Thank you very much, Nicole. And Graham, thanks for the question. Another voice note?
Hey, guys. I might need to buy a new vehicle quite soon. And I wanted some advice. I currently drive a RAV4. 2015, and it's quite adequate for my family, for myself. I find the petrol consumption a little bit heavy, and I wanted to get an idea on what would be, I would say, in the similar range. I don't need a new car, so what's also the most cost effective way to purchase the vehicle? Should I go for a two-year-old vehicle with motor plan and all of that, because I really don't want to hassle with issues after I buy the vehicle. So give me an idea. I've got a RAV4 at the moment, quite enjoy it. But I need some advice on what I should consider looking at if I need to buy a car within the next 6 to 12 months. Thanks, man. Cheers. Bye.
Thanks. Nicole, your response?
Yes. I mean, that SUV segment, if we look at the SUV segment, there's quite a few vehicles in that segment. 2015 is not old for a Toyota. I mean, if you want to keep it for another couple of years, definitely that you can do that. The RAV4 is one of the most popular vehicles in that segment, and I know the new RAV has just come out, it's just launched. So maybe if you want to trade in for a later model RAV, but still the previous model, Not the new one. You might get some good deals. I think there's quite a few people that are trading in their old RAVs for new ones. And if you can still can find a diesel version, that will sort your fuel consumption issues out. The petrols, with a petrol SUV of that size, you struggle to get better than 10 liters per 100 or 10 kilometers per liter, whereas with a diesel, you can drop down to about 7 liters per 100. So look at other competitors in that segment, SUV segment. You think about the VW Tiguan is very popular. We also ride the Mazda CX-5. So there are a couple of other options there for you to look at as well.
Okay, thanks for the advice and good luck with the purchase. Right, also on the WhatsApp line, somebody asking your opinion of the new Corolla Hatch XT.
Yes, we've actually got one in our long-term fleet. So again, if you buy a car magazine, you can actually read the updates on what we find with the new one. There's obviously, it's got the 1.2 turbo engine, which is lovely. There's a manual transmission option, and then it's also automatic. The automatic is a CVT gearbox, so that's the one with a belt and the pulley. So yeah, if you're a conservative driver, I think that type of gearbox works very well. But if you're sort of more enthusiastic, then probably go for the manual transmission. I find the ride to be excellent in that new Corolla Hatch, and definitely the quality is up there. I think with the Auris, it always like lagged behind the Golf, which is the segment leader, whereas the new Corolla Hatch is much closer in that sense and quality and refinement. So just also check the boot isn't the biggest in that segment. Just make sure that the boot size is fine. But otherwise, I can definitely recommend it.
Okay, thanks so much. I'm glad you mentioned boot size, because that is one of the key considerations for our next listener question. Shane is in the market for a second-hand, low-mileage Mazda CX-5 2-litre petrol, or alternatively a Hyundai Tucson 2-litre petrol. He says both these cars have large enough boot space for my two large dogs without having to put the back seats down. But he's looking for more than that. What would your opinion be on which would be the better choice in terms of reliability, fuel consumption, maintenance, and general performance? And are there any other competitors in the category worth considering?
It's very similar to the other SUV question we had. Mm. Just a quick note on boot sizes. We at Car Magazine, when we get a car to test, we actually physically measure the boot size with what we call ISO blocks, metric blocks. So it's actually little polystyrene blocks. The smallest one is 8 liters, and then they go up. So they represent actual stuff that you can fit into a boot, and we measure them and we publish those figures, because the figures that you get from the manufacturers are in liters. They're theoretical. If you would have like sealed off the boot and filled it with water, how much liter? But you know, I mean, you can't use that figure really, because you can't fit all those little corners and so on.
Yeah.
If we get back to the two choices there, you mentioned Mazda CX-5 and the Tucson. Those are great vehicles. I don't think either or you would make a mistake buying one of those. Just remember, if you buy a 2-liter naturally aspirated petrol engine, as I say, fuel consumption, you are looking at 10 liters per 100. You have to go diesel if you want to go for fuel economy, but obviously secondhand, the diesel is more complicated, might be statistically be more things that can go wrong. Similar with a turbo petrol as well. If you buy a 2-liter naturally aspirated petrol engine, you know nothing is going to go wrong. I mean, that's the tried and trusted technology, but you pay at the pumps a bit for that. Mm. Both vehicles are decent size. Again, segment leaders on SUV, as I mentioned before. You talk about the Toyota RAV4s, and then you talk about your VW Tiguans. Obviously, the Tucson and the Sportage are also in there, but as I say, those two aren't bad choices.
Okay, Nicol, thank you so much for the incredibly helpful advice you've given our listeners today. It's been a pleasure having you standing in for Chiro, and great to have you on the show. Remind us, the new edition of Car Magazine, the July version, should be out on shelf in about 2 weeks' time.
That is correct. Thanks for phone. Thanks, listeners.
Nicol Lowe, the technical editor for Car Magazine, and look for the latest edition in the middle of the month of June. A reminder, if you have got a motoring question, perhaps you're toying with a choice between two models and you'd like a bit of advice, all you need to do is send an email to me on pippah@capetalk.co.za. We'll pass it on to Chiro and get him to respond in the next motoring segment.